Blog Talk Radio. Streams of water flowing from within and above creation for each and every nation in this generation. And we're live because we're blessed to stay alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly suggest with a higher inner frequency, blessed souls, we call ourselves Soul Class. This happens to be Soul Class 636 in session with William Wayne Snellgrove. Blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. With Creator's help, we're now broadcasting live on January 15th, 2017, live from Turtle Island, equals the USA, equals Unified Soul Actualization. Our program content today will focus on being session with WWS Native Arts and Designs artist, designer, jewelry maker, writer, and former radio host, William Wayne Snellgrove. William Wayne Snellgrove will reflect upon his life experiences living here on Turtle Island, including his insights starting off his blessed life in Canada at one juncture in his blessed life. As well, he will share with us his eclectic yet extremely focused wisdom, which he has been using to promote hope, inspiration, last but not least, promoting the protection of one of the most valuable resources that resides upon, in addition to within this blessed earth, namely water, provided to us freely by our merciful Creator, identified by some as the great mystery. To listen you can, and participate, if you like to call in the second half hour of our program today, of our humble efforts, the number is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peaceful and pleasantly. Just want to mention the tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel collaborating with the Children of Noah to remove hatred, jealousy, and competition not needed. Turtle Island, do not destroy water sources intended for the human family experience. And last but not least, awaking slumbering souls. So we're going to segue down that music, which is a wonderful recording of a beautiful running creek somewhere in this creation. And without further ado, I'd like to bring in my co-host today, Wayne William Snellgrove. Good morning, Brother Soul.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I thank the Creator that I am able to share this next 58 plus minutes with you, Wayne. And I know that since you're a former radio host, you won't be intimidated by the idea. And just to let everyone know that this is an international audience, that the majority of our past listeners have come from the United States, Israel, Brazil, Australia, United Kingdom, followed by Germany, then Netherlands, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Australia, Indonesia, India, and South Africa. So I just want to point out that this is a wonderful opportunity to share your wisdom, Wayne. And with that being mentioned, before we formally agreed to do this program, that I wanted to allow you to give a little history about yourself. But your wonderful wife, Charlotte Miller, writing for the Indian Voices newspaper, wrote this very wonderful and very pictorial biographical sketch of you. I'd like to read it to our listening audience, and then, of course, you can jump in after I read it to embellish what parts you think are most salient for our blessed soul audience to listen to. So here we go.
Okay.
Wayne, thank you. Wayne, and this was written by your wife, I believe, on July 19, 2015. But it seems so 2017-ish. Based on my brief interaction with you, I think that it's a writing for ages. Here it goes. Wayne William Snellgrove stepped off the tiny dual-prop plane in Wadena, Saskatchewan, close to his native homeland of Fishing Lake First Nation Reserve. His head was pounding after a 16-hour flight from Miami. His mind was reeling with issues of past and hopes for the future. This former USA national swim champion could barely contain himself. This was the first time he had been to the reserve in 32 years. He recalls a gripping in his chest and butterflies in his stomach. He stepped off the plane directly onto the tarmac, and from where he stood, he saw a small sea of Indian faces surrounding one woman he had to see, his native mother. This was his first face-to-face ever encounter with his mother from the day he was born. Snellgrove was scooped up by the Canadian social workers and placed in an orphanage nearly 800 miles away. They did this without the consent of Snellgrove's mother or the rest of his family. While Nora Smoke, Snellgrove's birth mother, lay in a diabetic coma, one for which she would eventually fully recover from, her son was in the first phase of assimilation to white culture. He spent the first 4 years of his life in state-run facilities until he was adopted by a white, middle-class New England family. From state-run foster care, where kids were stacked in bunk beds and where he was routinely moved from facility to facility, the concept of family was foreign. So sure that he would once again be taken from his environment, young Snellgrove kept a go-pack tucked underneath his bed. In it was a jacket, a bag of M&Ms, and a couple of G.I. Joe action figures. It took years for him to unpack that bag. Says Snellgrove, "They were wonderful in every way of his white family. They gave me wonderful opportunities, but my entire life I felt like I didn't belong." Little wonder. Snellgrove looks Native. He was tall for his age and dark in predominantly white society. On top of that, he was born with a cleft palate, causing him to dislike immensely what he saw in the mirror and a speech impediment that was reason enough to make him fail first grade. Soon after, he tried killing himself by holding his breath. He recalls that during his fifth grade social studies class, the teacher taught a section how the West was won and referred to the savage Indians. He tried to become invisible, he recalls, by slinking down into the already too small desk as far as lanky frame would take him. "And that's when the fights began," he said. Snellgrove, with the humor of a man who survived the ordeal, "The kids asked what type of Indian I was, and I didn't know how to answer. I just didn't know," he said. But Snellgrove had a gift. He was tall with a slender, tapered body and an enormous wingspan. He didn't much like the pool at first, but wanted to swim like the rest of his classmates, so he kept at it. Before long, he far exceeded his own expectations. To the delight of his swimming coaches, he excelled. By the time he was in high school, he was a national record holder for every level age group. By the time he was in his 20s, he was on the U.S. swimming national team and went on to become a two-time USA swimming national champion. He is the first and only Native American to hold this honor, a fact largely ignored in the sports world. Shoulder injuries sidelined his career. "One minute, I was getting full scholarships to some of the most prestigious universities in the country. After I was hurt, the phone stopped ringing right away." He took a summer lifeguard position on the Jersey Shore and slowly got himself in shape again with salt water and ocean waves. Later, he began working for the Hollywood, Florida Beach Patrol, and soon he was asked to compete once again, this time in open water marathon swimming. And again, he excelled, winning competition after competition. Regardless of the successes, Snellgrove carried an underlying sadness. While he became respected and well-liked, he remained a loner. To deaden the yet-to-be-identified pain of his existence, he turned to drugs and alcohol. During this time, his white mother died of cancer. Snellgrove returned to New England and to attend to her funeral. Quote, I stood looking over her in her casket, and it came to me, this intense feeling of mourning at this moment was what I had been feeling my whole life. Not only had I lost one mother, I had lost two, end of quote. At that moment, he knew that his spirit would not rest until he found the story behind his adoption. He secretly searched his father's files for his birth records. He learned he was born Dwayne Ivan Smoke on the Fishing Lake First Nation in Saskatchewan, Canada. One night while perusing websites, he came under mention of Native Canadian adoptees of the 60s scoop, and the name of the investigator who matched scoop kids with their big families. He followed the lead that ended with two names and two phone numbers of Nora Smoke. The next day, the investigator called Snellgrove, quote, I have just spoken to the most wonderful woman in the world, end of quote. She told him, quote, that woman is your mother, end of quote. She, too, had been searching for her son. She never forgot him and never gave up hope that she would one day find him again. As Snellgrove stood on the tarmac in Wadena 32 years later, he spotted his mother immediately. Quote, what do you say to your mother for the first time, end of quote, he wondered. It didn't matter. He hugged her and told her he loved her and that he had never forgotten about her. Their bond was immediate. This meeting was not only the missing link Snellgrove had longed for his entire life, but it set him on the red road journey of forgiveness, kindness, and compassion. He became reunited with his heritage and his culture. For the past 17 years, he has worked with Delaware Nanticoke, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, Nanticoke tribe medicine man Tony Stonehawk. Together, they take ceremony to Native inmates of Florida state and federal prisons. Snellgrove teaches introduction to Native spiritual classes at South Florida Spiritual Centers and is a firekeeper for Inipi ceremonies. He is an artist, writer, and public speaker using these mediums to educate and about Native heritage, culture, and spirituality. Wayne, I want to tell you, I have goose pimples on both my forearms as I read this, because this is an epic story of triumph, of spirit over body, of being ripped from one's native human right to be brought up by one's own family, and yet you've like a salmon that has swum up river. You didn't pass away on the conclusion of your journey. You are spawning new eggs of consciousness for the human family experience. And again, it's my pleasure and honor to have you on the program. And I'd like to please share with our audience some thoughts on this wonderful piece of writing your wife wrote.
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. It's an honor to be here. As you were reading that, I haven't read that in a long time. And as you were reading it, I was reading along with it. And tears came to my eyes, because I remember the day that I saw my mother for the first time. I remember walking off that tarmac. You took me right back there. And
wow, man.
It was a little teeny tiny airport. There was no terminal walkway from the terminal to the thing. So we just got off the airplane, and I just remember walking up, and I met her. There was a sea of Native Americans. They were all my family. They turned out to be my family. I didn't really know that. But in the center of that was my mom. And I knew, and she was surrounded and being hugged and being loved by my three sisters. And they surrounded her with so much love. And I can remember just crying and just saying, I love you. That's, you know, really, what do you say to your mom for the first time? You know, what do you say? I'm still crying when I think about that.
We have a saying, real men cry and real men do art.
I do both.
Okay.
That's great.
I do a little myself.
Wonderful. We'll have to talk about that one day, but that was the first time I had been doing a little bit of Sweat Lodge with Tony Stonehawk before that. Really trying to figure out what my Native spirituality was, but it wasn't until I met my family that everything clicked and everything said that, you can pursue this your Native American culture with Tony Stonehawk, and that's exactly what I did. So here I am, over 15 years later, still doing it. Just really, what an honor it is for me to bring ceremony to the people.
When could you explain to us, now, at the end of the article, it mentioned that you're on the red road journey of forgiveness, kindness, and compassion. I have never, I am no expert, and I just want to mention as a preemptive statement that one of the reasons why I've tried to reach out, and I did one radio show with Mohawk native John Kane, who's an excellent radio host here in New York City once a week in upstate New York, that my mentor, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, a descendant of King David and Solomon, mentioned about the history of violence in America, and he said another time that matter would have to be discussed, and yet I don't think I need to become an expert in the history of your people as much as I need to become a student of the history, as I like to become a student of different people's history, different nations' histories. And it's more authentic when the narrative comes from those who have been on that journey, unfortunately, on the receiving end of the excessive violence against the indigenous peoples of Turtle Island. So in spite of all that, you have embarked on a journey of forgiveness, kindness, and compassion. Can you talk about that Red Road journey for our listening audience?
Absolutely, and great question. The Red Road is the Native American spiritual journey. The medicine wheel tells us that we walk from innocence at birth to wisdom. And along that journey, there's many lessons. Some of us are further along in that journey. Some of us don't even know that we're on that journey. But this is about spiritual growth. This is about connectedness. This is about balance. That's what the medicine wheel teaches us, and that's what the Red Road is. My personal journey on the Red Road, my growth really came when I forgave the Canadian government. That's when my growth really, really blossomed. That's when I really came into my own. My spiritual teachings and my mind and my body was almost instantly flooded with what we call hollow bones. What my ancestors called hollow bones is we become a conduit of the spirit, a conduit of creator, a conduit. So we call that. So it flows through us. I allow spirit to flow through me, and instead of holding on, and what stops that? What stops that flow, that energy, that love, that life, is hate. And I hated for a long time, and that stunted my spiritual growth.
Wow! So, can I share with you? Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, yeah, finish your point.
It's just when. But as I learned to forgive, found out that gave me a future.
Wow.
Did that happen
when you reunited with your mother and sisters, or was it previous to that?
Well, it was kind of ongoing. When I found out about the Stitches Scoop, I was, of course, horrified. I was actually glad. Actually, in a strange way, I was actually kind of glad that there was a thing called the 60s group, because in my mind before that, I didn't really know what had happened to me. I thought I could have been like a product of rape or incest. My mom had a one night stand, said, you know what, I really don't want this kid, so I'm just going to put him into foster care or to like an orphanage. I'm just going to adopt him away. And so my whole life growing up, you know, that's what I thought. And, you know, I thought that I was a bad baby. I thought because of my cleft palate, that was the reason that my mom chose not to love me. Because moms love perfect babies, and they love 10 toes, 10 fingers, beautiful smiles. Well, I had 10 toes, 10 fingers, but I you know, had a big hole in the center of my face. And it was pretty, and every time I looked in the mirror, that's what I saw as a child growing up. And I figured, well, that's the reason why, you know, that's the reason why I'm unlovable. And that's why she abandoned me.
Let me ask you this. Your swimming prowess, which was mentioned, we've heard it, all of us, you know, growing up here in America, have heard of Jim Thorpe. How come we didn't hear about your, your athletic achievements? It's a little bit strange that why did it just stop at Jim Thorpe? Why wasn't your name, how come we didn't hear about you on Wild World of Sports or whatever, you know, national broadcast?
I really don't know. that, you know, that's just a mystery to me too. Here's a cool little story. That I am going to be one of the coaches for next year's North American Indigenous Games.
Wow!
For Team Saskatchewan, the place where they took me from. I am now going to be a swim coach for.
Wow.
So this is really coming full circle. This is really just a wonderful thing. But to really answer your question, I have no idea why no one's picked up this story. I'm actually a little curious about that myself.
Okay. I mean, hopefully, yeah. I'd like to give you a humble blessing that somehow you'll be able to gather the funds, that this can be the source of a documentary, you know, coming full circle and being able to tie this into the Red Journey, the Red Road Journey. The Red Road. I'd like to share with them when you talk about getting over bad feelings. This is actually a Hebrew teaching, which it could sound like, you know, this is something that you've heard before, and what you talked about is something I've heard before, just showing that there are certain wisdoms that go way back into the creation, going back to original earth peoples, which were all descendants of the original earth peoples. It goes like this.
Right.
As soon as there arises from his heart to his mind any animosity or hatred, God forbid, or jealousy, anger, or a grudge, and their like, he will bar them from his mind and will. On the contrary, his mind will prevail over and dominate his feelings of his heart to do the exact opposite of what his heart previously had desired, namely to conduct himself towards his fellow with the quality of kindness as opposed to the quality of severity where hatred and anger originate, and to display towards his fellow a disproportionate love in suffering from him to the furthest extreme, and without being provoked into anger, God forbid, or to take revenge in any kind, God forbid, even without anger. But on the contrary, he repays offenders with favors. That is taught in, we have a holy book called the Zohar, the Book of Light, that we should learn the example from the example of Joseph from the Bible and his conduct with his brothers when he repaid them for the suffering as which they sold him into slavery. He was brought down to Egypt. They brought upon him by bestowing them with kindness and favors. So you talked about the Red Road, and here we have it's a very primal teaching from a teaching called the Tanya from when there are Jewish people. It's really coming. It's really the same idea. So we have if people open up their hearts, when they can really access this universal wisdom and realize that, you know, aside from whatever backgrounds we have, we all have the same amount of, generally speaking, same amount of bones and teeth. You know, and a heart and a brain.
Yeah.
And when we think about how much we have more in common, the differences slip away and the fears slip away. And then last but not least, and hopefully should slip away, is the hatred slips away. Your comment on these matters.
Absolutely. Well, that's a beautiful teaching, and I love it. The first thing that my medicine man taught me, he didn't really teach me. He lovingly suggested that when I'm ready, when I'm really ready to let that go, even if I'm not really ready, we pray for our enemies. We pray for their peace. We pray for their happiness. We pray for their love. Everything that we want for ourselves, we pray it for them. We pray it for
Beautiful.
Them. So what? The concept behind that is, what I do for you, I do for me. What I fail to do for you, I fail to do for me. You see that? you see, we're talking about the flow of love here, the flow of energy, the flow of life. When I pray for you, that will come full circle back to me. That completes that energy flow.
I agree. Can you elaborate a little, because I know because of the way Hollywood portrays them, they basically stigmatize them and want to put them into a category of health practitioner experiences that people would find not to their taste. Explain to us, please, in, as we conclude, we come to the end of our first half hour, the whole idea of a medicine man. He's not, you know, he's not someone who went to medical school. He is someone well versed in certain ancient wisdoms. Please elaborate. What is the native understanding of the medicine man, so the people of the outside world can understand why the medicine man is so revered within your culture and the nations upon Turtle Island?
Right. Well, the medicine man is referred to in various ways and aspects. He's called a holy man, medicine man. There are lots of different kinds of medicine men. Tony Stonehawk is a spiritual medicine man. He teaches and practices spiritual medicine. And that's what I know. There's other medicines out there, medicine men out there that practice herbal medicine. Now, I don't know I know a little bit about herbal medicine, but I don't know a lot about herbal medicine. That's just not what he taught me. There's medicine. Yeah, there's, yeah. So there's really about two. Yeah.
So, okay. And so you mentioned that he would suggest to you when you're ready. So it wasn't that he was giving you straight doctrine as much as what? What would he do? Would he do be like sort of like reflective listening, listen to you talk, and then reflect back to you what you said? Or can you walk us through this process of a spiritual medicine man a little more? It doesn't have to be about
Absolutely.
Anything personal issues with you. Just to give us a paradigm, because we need to see, I think, more spiritual medicine men all over the world, because there's just too much hatred going on and too much violence going on
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I talked to him. We were sitting ceremony. Ceremonies when two hearts are talking to each other. So technically, you and me are in ceremony right now, from one heart talking to the other heart. He let me grow at my own pace. When I was ready to finally let go, then he suggested that this is what I should do, and this is what I should continue to do. And I pray hard on it. One of his favorite things is his favorite quote is to just pray hard. Just you know, whenever you have that those feelings come in, pray hard. Pray hard for their love. Pray hard for their families. Pray hard for their health. Pray hard. It was rarely ever about me. It was always for the health and welfare of my enemies. And it was a little different because the Canadian government's government. And so, but he said, go ahead and do it anyway. Just pray anyway. Just pray for whoever took you, whoever, whatever orphanage you were in, whatever, you know, whatever happened there, you know, forgive them, you know, because there's a lot of stuff that happened in there. And I had to just,
sure.
and I had to deal with them too, you know, and I had to deal with all those people that made fun of me. And I had to pray for all those people that hated me. And I pray for all those people that beat me up because of my cleft palate. I had to pray for all those people that came after me because I was a Native American, you know. There was a lot of praying going on here, you know. But when I finally got ready to let go, when I finally got ready to say, you know what, I can't hold on to this anymore. It was literally killing me. It literally killed me.
Wow.
What happens is, the spiritual manifests itself in the physical. So my body was starting to break down. It was starting to feel the effects of not praying, of holding on, feeling the effect of holding on to that hate. It's reflected in the body, in the mind, in the emotional welfare, in the mental welfare, in the physical welfare, and especially in the spiritual welfare, where I just couldn't hold it together anymore. And I said, Creator, God, please, Great Spirit, help me. And then those lonely words, powerful and lonely words from Grandpa, said, pray hard and pray for your enemies. So that's what I did.
Beautiful. Wena, this is a very humbling dialogue, and I do feel we're in ceremony. We're now coming up to now the second half of the program, and we do have a caller in. He's a longtime friend of mine, and he's been a former, I don't want to say former, it's just as I think I mentioned to you before we did the show earlier this week or late last week, you know, I'm unfortunately in a year of mourning for my father, and I'm dedicating today's program for the ascension of the soul of my father, Reb Shlomo Yaakov ben Chuna David. But one of my co-hosts of different various programs I do, his name is Dennis Ryan, and he's on the line, and he started off life a little similar to you, and I'm sure he'll have some questions, and he'll have some comments. He's a very wise man, as you are. So I'm going to bring in Dennis to welcome on today's program. Let's bring him in.
Oh, hey, Dennis.
But Dennis, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. How you doing, everybody?
Hey, Dennis.
I want to introduce Dennis. This is William Wayne Snellgrove. He prefers to be called Wayne. And Wayne, this is Dennis Ryan. Dennis is a teacher and student for the seminary of a very wise Jewish sage from about 850 years ago called Rambam. And he has also a similar background. I think, Dennis, you also mentioned once to me that you also started life in an orphanage.
I didn't start. I, around 10 years old, life began for me in an orphanage.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. At quite an early age. So maybe you have you'd like to interact with Wayne, share some experiences.
I've been listening to your conversation, and it is very interesting because I believe that the human spirit is powerful, and I think Wayne is an example of that. Why? Because when we find out who and what we are, we adjust. And when we adjust, our spirit that God has given us flows. It flows between us and other people, and it's enhanced as it goes around. And it almost reminded me when you started the question about the so-called witch doctor. We used to call them sachems,
medicine men.
Sachem was one of the words that was used. And what happens is sachem is the main channeling point that gives you wisdom regarding the flow of the spirits between the human and the non-human. And what it does, it directs you to either the human or the non-human or both. And that was the wisdom of the medicine man. He not only worried about you physically, but mentally, and at the same time tried to direct you to a path that would be the best for the future. He made those decisions on the wisdom he accumulated through the years. So, yes, we are imperfect, and we all have to realize where our imperfections are. Sometimes they're physical, sometimes they're mental. But it can be high degree, low degree, or the whole band between them. And we have to adjust. Why? Because our spirit must live and thrive. And when it does, we feel like we are complete. And that is the whole concept of being able to enjoy our spirit, whether it's human or non-human.
Yeah. That's wonderful. That was beautiful. Thank you.
Wayne, the one question I have for you that interested me while I was listening to you, and that is you said you had a turning point, a pivotal point that meant something to you because it changed your outlook on the world and yourself. And that was when you said you learned how to forgive. So I'm interested in what led up to you or the change of the conditions of anything that you realized that if you don't forgive, you're going in the wrong direction.
Well, I was already mired in that wrong direction. I was drinking heavily. I was drugging heavily. I was in depression. I was so terribly sad. I didn't feel like I was connected to anything.
That's like saying your spirits were at the lowest point you could actually live by.
Yeah, sure, and there's many suicide attempts, and there's probably over 20 suicide attempts, survivor of
because
that.
We have a biblical figure who's kept saying, "Why me, Lord?" and he kept thinking that the worst things were happening to me, but not to other people, till he came to a point of realization. And that's what I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, so this was, I got this piecemeal, in small increments, but when I finally made that decision to save my life, when I finally made that decision to stop drinking and to put the drugs down and to really go to ceremony and to really take it into heart, to pray about others, to learn about the medicine wheel, to learn about my connection to all life. The medicine wheel teaches us four things. Well, four main things. We go into ceremony for four reasons: for purification and healing of our spirit, for purification and healing of the physical, of my physical body, purification and healing of my emotional well-being, purification and healing of my mental well-being. And so when I finally got out of my own way, when I finally decided to change, the miracle happened. It's really just as simple as that. And the miracle happened. The drinking went away. The drugging went away. And as a consequence to that, there was happiness in my life. And with that happiness, we talked about the flow of love, the flow of energy, that flow of connection to all things. Because the medicine wheel teaches us that we are connected to all things, not just my interpersonal relationships with other humans, but with all life. We go to ceremony to celebrate all life. We are connected to all life. And it's when I finally took that in, that was a big part of my recovery. What was being connected to something. And not only was I connected to something, I was connected to everything. Everything that has life has spirit, and so everything that has spirit is connected to me. And so I'm like, so now I have all these brothers and sisters and like relatives. I can go outside. That's why, that's why when we go outside and we sit in the park or we go to the forest, we get that sense of peace and calm.
But once you get that feeling of peace, fear sort of subsides. So you feel confident in what you can do. But one of the main turning points that all humans have is, do you want to do what you're doing today tomorrow? And that's the fear sometimes that people realize, that if I keep doing what I'm doing tomorrow, then what is the difference between today and tomorrow? So some people in their lives will come to a point that we call realization. Maybe there's another way. Maybe there's something else I can do other than do what I've been doing or any habits that I've picked up. Mm. So most religions in the world today have those same four parts of the wheel that you're talking about, only they call it different names and they have different references for it. But it's a human thing that we all have to go through. And if we don't realize it, well, then we're stuck in a rut somewhere, and we just don't understand what it is to change for the better. So for all those people who say, I don't want to do what I'm doing today, do they really want to do better? Can they accept change?
Right. Also one of my big healings came from the real in-depth study and looking at our spiritual journey from innocence to wisdom. And I had to understand my journey. I had to learn to love my journey from innocence to wisdom. I had to acknowledge and accept and love that my life is a journey. I can remember once I had this really vivid dream, and they call it a vision. And I've been having these visions since I was very little. And I think I was in a really dark part of my life. And one of the spirits came to me and said, think of your life as an adventure.
Well, we have a famous man in history who said life is a test. So you may call it a journey, an adventure, an experience. But he was looking at the overall life of humans, and he said it's really a test to see if you can be as good as you can be.
I'd like to interject, you know, in terms of, like, for instance, a lot of people are motivated for making change out of fear of what's beyond this physical world. I'd like to give a perspective. One time, Lubavitcher Rebbe was asked by some Jewish college students about, well, what happens after death? And the Rebbe responded that the question should be rephrased, what happens at the next stage of life? Because I think a lot of people, unfortunately, in the West, are kind of disconnected to this idea, which is probably more familiar with more ancient cultures, whether it be here on Turtle Island or on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean or the other side of the Pacific Ocean. There's a continuity of consciousness. And I'd like to share this and then go into our last segment of our program, gentlemen, for blessed souls listening out there. There's a connection between man and earth. From the Hebrew perspective, the two words that connect the concept of the word man and earth in the Hebrew are two similarly sounding words. The word for man is Adam, and then the word for earth is Adama. The difference is there's a ha sound at the end of Adama for earth. What is this about? That before we were, you know, extracted out of the earth, we had a unconscious placental breathing that connected us to our original womb, which was the earth, an all-encompassing earth, an earth that was all connected. There was no disunity. And this was being fused into our primordial being. And then, Creator's wisdom, we were extracted out of the earth. And we, so to speak, lost that asan. We sort of lost that connection with our placental subconscious breathing. And it is precisely the reason why I bring this concept to the table of discussion with Wayne, because there is, if we lose our conscious perception that we still have an unconscious or subconscious, or still have a subconscious connection to placental breathing with our original mother, the earth, then it can be understandable why there's such a great disconnect on the part of those who are investing in a particular pipeline out in North Dakota called the Dakota Access Pipeline, that if part of the earth is also the water that flows through the earth. And Wayne, this is a very serious issue, because if even from our biblical perspective, there is a concept of do not destroy, meaning, okay, we can chop down a tree, but if it's a fruit tree, we should not cut down a fruit tree. We should cut down a tree that is best suited for making, say, like a log cabin or furniture. And I know from the indigenous peoples of Turtle Island, when I saw more than once these displays of how a buffalo was used. I mean, at least 50 different uses were made to the buffalo. The only thing left was probably it was taken down, stripped down to its DNA, and then whatever that was left for to be put back into the earth. So I'd like you to talk about now this whole idea of, unfortunately, because of the disconnect of man from earth, so it shouldn't surprise us that he's disconnected, men, or there are also women who are disconnected as well, from the significance of this potential disaster of this DAPL pipeline going through, which would be, according to biblical standards, would be an outright transgression of do not destroy a water resource, which could affect up to 18 million people living on this continent.
Absolutely. Well, that's a pretty big question. Let me try to tackle this for you. Well, first of all, the earth, in the native sense, the earth is our mother. She is both mother and grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She gives us everything that we need. We are not separated from her at all. It may seem that we're separate entities, but in reality, in native thinking, that we are connected with her. We are connected with all life. All life has medicine for us. So let's just take, for instance, the tree. There is a machine out there that actually turns what we breathe out into oxygen again that we can breathe, and that machine is called the tree. We are cutting down trees at an incredible rate. We are cutting out our own lungs. They say it takes 800 trees for us to take one breath.
Wow.
800 trees for us to take one breath. So we're cutting. We're talking about an interconnectedness to all life. They all have medicine. The water, in particular, it is the blood of Mother Earth. All life comes from the water. It needs water. There's no humans are like 80% water. The Earth is 80% water. There's what we do to the Earth, we do to ourselves. So as the Earth is increasingly infected, toxified, we are doing that to ourselves. And so what's so important about the Dakota Access Pipeline is that we are trying, those people, the water protectors, are trying to stop the bleeding of Mother Earth, because it's not a matter of when this pipeline is going to burst. It's just a question of when. There's 2.4 million miles of pipeline in the United States. That's a lot of pipeline going up. And now, yes. What's interesting about this, though, as kind of like a side note, is that this has brought people together. Normally, people that wouldn't mix of different races, of different ethnicities, of different religions, this Dakota Access has really galvanized and brought together the real voice of the people. And so that's an incredible thing when people gather together for the protection and the love of Mother Earth. That is a miracle. And we're going to allow that prayer to go on, you know, because what happens to water is a reflection of us.
Yep.
The health of the water is a reflection of us. The health of the trees is a reflection of us. The health of, you name it, is a reflection of us. You know, it's just, you know, we don't want to lose anything here. So.
We have a wise man in our again, as I mentioned before, Rambam. He mentioned that what one sees in another is a reflection of oneself. When one looks out into the creation, seeing it's being needlessly destroyed, one cannot think that this has nothing to do with oneself. I mean, we know. I mean, look what happened even prior to this whole DAPL situation up in Flint, Michigan. Those poor children and families being exposed to water, which caused brain damage and all sorts of. And not only that, if people are thinking about the bottom line, it will actually cost the state of Michigan or the federal funding to spend even more money for the continuing health care of these people. As not only that, it makes society less stable by inducing all sorts of disabilities into people, heaven forbid.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, right. Well, you know, what's really happening is, like, what's behind all this is a disease of consciousness. It's a disease of the mind, because all this is a spiritual problem. This is the human problem. Only the human has forgotten the ancient sacred agreement between itself and all life. And that sacred agreement, the ancient sacred agreement, was balance. That ancient sacred agreement was harmony. And only man has forgotten that. Man has stepped away from that agreement, from that contract. We have a contract with life, all life. And man has stepped away. There's a disease of the mind, a disease of the consciousness that says greed is okay. Destroying is okay. And that's why we go to ceremony. We pray for life. We pray to bring back that ancient sacred agreement. That's the bottom line with this, you know, with this DAPL thing. The bottom line is we've forgotten the agreement between all life.
Dennis, would you like to make any comments?
Yes, Wayne. What happens is that God has created humans, and he has created the earth. What happens is he's doing his part from Mother Nature. You may say it's good or bad. That's your judgment. However, the humans were supposed to be stewards of the planet. And for some reason or another, we replaced that with progress. So we're saying that who cares what happens to the planet because we're making progress. But as you would say, part of that progress is against the human race. So if you're going to destroy things that were put here by God, it doesn't make sense because in the end, you're working against yourself. So
you're destroying yourself. Yes, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a concept that's going on today. A lot of people don't know how to express it, or they attribute it to a project that's going on, when in effect, it's a total human effort regarding the totality of the earth, because that's where we live. This is our home. Our future generations are going to be here. So why would we make it more difficult? Yet, when we were building the World Trade Center, we came apart because we had to dig 30, 40, 50 feet down. We came upon an old burial site that was used in the 1800s for slaves and other people who were considered lower class people, and they buried them there. So the authorities saying, well, what should we do? And after all is said and done, they put up a little plaque that still exists on one of the buildings down there today, saying this is the site of a formal burial ground. But for the sense of progress, we proceeded to just plow that under, keep on going, and to satisfy what we did, we put up a plaque on the edge of a building. Well, all those lives that were there will no longer be honored, and it's like they didn't exist. But due to progress, we sort of bury history behind us. It's not a good cycle of events.
Right.
Can I ask you a question? Where the DAPL, where they want to put into the pipelines, is that going through indigenous people's burial grounds as well?
Yes.
Well. Here's the thing. Originally, the pipeline was going to go through Bismarck. Bismarck is primarily 95% white. The people of Bismarck said no, and so the Energy Transfer Partners that own the pipeline said, "Well, we'll just run it through this reservation here because no one cares about the Indians," and so. And so that's what they did. They put it on the backs of the marginalized people, and because they did that, it runs through sacred land. You know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people say the Indians don't count because they are Indians, and somebody has to remind them that they were the original settlers of America. And what did we do? We pushed them out of the way so we couldn't see them, tried to pretend that their burial grounds, burial mounds that are still there today, are meaningless. So this is all done for progress, that the past doesn't mean anything. Wayne uses the word disconnect. Boy, have we created a disconnect here, because we are what was here. We are what was before us. We cannot forget of all the human life that went on before us, because how are we going to treat the future?
Well, here's the thing.
I just
also,
like to. Go ahead, Wayne. Go ahead.
Yes. Please. Well, you know, when we go to ceremony, we celebrate the four races of men. We don't go to celebrate just the lives of Native American men. or the Native American people. We go to life to celebrate the brotherhood, the fellowship between all men, the yellow, the white, the red, and the black. And because we're all equal in the eyes of the Creator. And I think this is something that that if people really took this to heart, that this world would be a much more peaceful place.
I agree. I'd like to interject when that I know that as a member of the Jewish people, we raise, excuse my French, we raise hell with the idea what's happening in Europe, where people have gone in and tried to bulldoze over our grave sites. So this is a this is not just an indigenous people perception. I think any people of any sense of self and well-being and self-esteem realizes that we must honor the sites of where our elders or our ancestors have been buried. There are certain spaces all over the earth which are sanctified for the laying to rest, because we, you know, from the earth we came and to the earth we shall return. It just it's absolutely despicable. I just, you know, I wish I had more in my power. I guess it's the only way I can express my humble effort to allow you to express things. So people outside of, as they call the Judeo-Christian heritage, should realize. I mean, I know Christians would also be in arms if some multinational corporation were going to plow over the cemetery. I just saw the other day something where it was depicted in a film where these Western professor and his students were doing archaeological digs in Lakota territory, and the Lakota Indian said, Lakota individual said to him, "Well, how would you feel I did archaeological digs in your cemeteries? How would you feel about that?" And he, you know, I mean, that's and that, truth be told, this is a crime against, this is a crime against humanity, that they should have what we call chutzpah in Yiddish. It's an audacity to bring about that type of, it's a denial of the sanctity of human life, even at that stage of human life where we're laid back into ground. As I mentioned before, our question should be not what happens after death, but what happens in the next level of life. But our former, like, just like the what is that creature that starts out in a cocoon and eventually becomes a more multicolored creature? Was it the butterfly, right? So to speak, we're in our cocoon stage, and we go back, and then we ultimately, hopefully, become that butterfly at the next level of life. And I just want to mention as well that before I ask you for some advice on this matter, Wayne, is that there's a wonderful DVD that I bought in the last year, you know, due in part to John Cain, again, Mohawk native from upstate New York. It's called The Doctrine of Discovery. It's called Unmasking the Domination Code, historical truth, spirituality, and resistance told on behalf of the original nations and the peoples of Great Turtle Island and elsewhere on Mother Earth. We are still here and still rightfully free. And this is directed by Sheldon P. Wolfchild, co-produced by Stephen T. Newcomb, and narrated by Buffy St. Marie. And you can go to this to get this wonderful DVD. It runs, I think, a little less than an hour. It runs 61 minutes. You can go to www.38plus2productions.com. So as we come to the conclusion of today's program, what can people do? What can our blessed soul listening audience around the world do if they want to learn more about DAPL, they want to connect to you, or any endeavors you'd like to promote into the future?
Well, I'd just like to add one thing.
Yes.
Before I start with that, when we talk about the Red Road and we talk about our journey from innocence to wisdom, it is not just an individual journey from innocence to wisdom. As a human race, we are also walking that road from innocence to wisdom. Back when Hammurabi, if someone lost an eye, they were taken high. We don't do that anymore.
Right.
You know, slavery has pretty much been abolished. You know, so the human, we as humans are walking that spiritual journey too, and I see improvement in that mm-hmm. journey. I think we're heading in the right direction. Things aren't all bad. That's what I'm trying to say. And
I agree with you.
You know, especially with this rainbow prophecy, where the people are coming together. You know, that's a good thing. When people come together in the name of love, Mother Earth, that's a good thing. People of all races are coming together. I think that's a good thing. So, you know, DAPL coming together, this DAPL thing and bringing people together, which is a good consequence. So, but as far as me, you can get a hold of me at Wayne William Snellgrew at facebook.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be in Europe this summer. I'll be in Germany doing ceremonies.
Wow.
Over in Freiburg, yeah. Freiburg and all over Germany.
Okay. And once you become, when you become the swimming coach, hopefully at a future program, I'd like to have you back on when you feel that the time is right. And if we can even bring on Tony Stonehawk, if he doesn't mind coming on, it'd be very interesting. I want to widen the circle, brother. I want to widen the circle.
I love it. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And certainly we can. It might be a wife, but unfortunately, someone from the 561 area code called in, but we're going to be concluding the program. Sorry, caller from area code 561, which I believe is Florida. I'm sorry I can't take your call right now. Hopefully we'll do that
Florida,
in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, any final commentaries before we segue out of today's program?
Yes, Wayne is a testament that things are getting better, because if he can mm-hmm. survive, people who have less of a journey to take can also survive. So more power to Wayne. Thank you. I enjoyed listening to you. And the only final words I have to say is that we should pray in bad times and good times, because we need it. We need it because we don't know exactly what we need. But without prayer, what are we hanging on to?
Right.
Thank you, Dennis.
Exactly. I just want
to end with this note that I'm praying for the restoration of the type of consciousness that the rainbow circle, the rainbow nations, as I like to call the human family experience, shall have a resurrection of consciousness, not just of fully being conscious of their responsibilities as good stewards of the earth, but also becoming more aware of their subconscious placental breathing experiences before we were in the form that we are. It is accessible. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of humility, a lot of prayer, a lot of meditation, a lot of good counsel with our elders of all different nations in this generation, but we can do it. And I just want to remind everyone that we've got to be good. Why do we have to be good? Because Ateva Tov Lehetiv, it is a oral tradition amongst the Jewish people, that is the nature of the good to do good, and the Creator is the source of all goodness. And one of the best things he did is that he put you on the earth, blessed souls. Even though that might conjure up for some people some anxiety or any sort of feeling other than, you know, they should just jump into it and just try to do as much good as they can, that's okay, because the Creator is patient. And for sure, Wayne is blessed and Dennis is blessed. We're all blessed with the divine image. Will help us get up from scrimmage to realize that we can internalize the idea that we can be loved and we can give love. Now, I want to segue out with today an a cappella version. Basically, the only instruments you can hear are the blessed combination of different voices coming from Israel, a rendition of Bob Marley's Could You Be Loved. So again, I want to thank Wayne today for coming on the show, and Dennis. This is Don Zusio Goodman wishing everyone a wonderful week, and let us all be reunited in not only the best of times, but times even greater than our expectations of what great can be. And this is truly through the mercies of the Creator, who's only asking us that we walk in mercy as well. Take care, everyone.
Could you belong? Could you be? Could you belong? Could you be? Could you be? Could you be?